Hey, everybody. Matt, your host, cutting in here right at the beginning from the far future. No, not really. Just the future from when we recorded this, literally like an hour ago from when you're hearing this. Sorry. I don't know why I apologized. Anyway, this episode of our Supersode is spoiler heavy. Seriously. Especially the last book we talk about. If you have any interest in reading the Dresden Files series yourself and getting to experience all of the thrills and chills and all that without one of the biggest books being spoiled, don't listen to this. Don't listen to the next episode. Go read the books, and after you get through Changes, you can come back and listen to this episode. I'm not going to be mad if you do that. Melissa's not going to be mad if you do that. Seriously, go. If you have any intention of reading this and you don't want some huge stuff spoiled, like Avengers level stuff spoiled here, stop listening now. Okay, have fun. Bye. Welcome to Fifth Draw Wild, everybody. I'm your host, Matt, and once again, we're joined by Melissa for this second Supersode this year, all about the Dresden Files. Melissa, welcome back.
Hi, Matt.
So we ended a little sooner than we thought last week because schedules got weird, but whatever. It's fine. We're plowing right along, and we're diving in to our next group of books. We're covering four this week. And, these get kind of big.
Yeah, one of them is the biggest.
Yeah, we're gonna get there. So which one are we starting with?
We are starting with book 9. This is White Knight.
All right. This is kind of a weird one. It's very much like just kind of a small scale deal.
Probably the last time we get one of those.
Yeah, for a little while. So what it is the overall plot is someone is killing magic practitioners in Chicago, and it's kind of insinuated around the world. Mm-hmm. Small scale magic practitioners, people who don't have enough power to be on the White Council and who have like traditionally then not been included and protected. And Harry, as is his deal, kinda takes that poorly.
Yep, especially because it is mostly ladies, and that is his weak spot, something he admits to himself over and over again should not matter and he should really stop doing. But if though there's a lady, it's like, it's his kryptonite, like, it's his magnet, like, he has to help a lady.
Yeah, he's, I mean, this book is named White Knight for a lot of reasons.
Mostly because it deals with the White Court. And I remember, I think I told you a theory that I'm like, White Knight sounds awfully matrimonial. Maybe there's a wedding in this one. And it was like, not until the second I started this book, then I'm like, oh, wait, the White Court of Vampires, duh. Like, the entire symbolism was staring at me the whole time.
So, we're going to kind of burn through two of these books real fast, everybody. Sorry, go read them. They're both very good books.
Yes.
This one, the biggest thing to talk about is the reappearance of this character named Cowl. He was first seen in Deadbeat, and he's kind of this big bad evil guy, more or less.
Yeah, definitely has some sort of ties to the amorphous, mysterious, malevolent Black Council.
Yeah, and kind of implied to maybe be leading it, but we're not sure. Mm-hmm. He can do a lot of really powerful magic stuff in a lot of really kind of creepy ways. But the biggest thing that happens is there's this big fight that goes down in what's called the Wraith Deeps. It's where a lot of like White Court rituals happen.
Yeah, their own private cave.
Yeah, and so like Dresden manipulates and reacts to events and ends up getting thrown into this duel, him and another wizard, against two vampires until all hell breaks loose. And then someone steps in to save Harry.
Oh, that's right. It's Lash.
Lashiel, the shadow of the demon in the coin, creates a time bubble, which is insanely powerful magic.
Mm-hmm.
And begs almost on her hands and knees for Harry to take up the coin so that she can save him.
And he won't do it. He'll never do it.
Yeah, and she makes a choice after this long discussion on free will. And what does Lash do?
The magic that is being used against Harry has mostly mental repercussions to it. And she, being the sort of shade in his mind, wraps herself around his mind and insulates him and takes the entirety of the blow herself. And she basically dies.
It's described as that she takes a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
Dresden gets to kind of jump out of this mind magic, get everybody else clear, and a bunch of explosives that they had brought into the Wraith Deeps start to detonate, and Harry has to get himself and Lara Wraith out.
Oh, yes!
And he realizes this thing where, magic gets fueled by a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the things that can fuel it is intense emotion. And Harry has this moment where he's just like, well, lust is an emotion. And turns to the sex vampire and it's just like, hey, maybe do that thing.
Yeah, this is the one time I want you to do it.
And he uses the energy from that to basically make them into a bullet that gets fired out of the cave gun.
It's great. And she's got that, what vampires of the White Court can't touch somebody touched by true love. It burns them. And so she pulls away from him, burned. And she's like, this is still Susan Rodriguez's effect on you. Have you not been with anyone since Susan was in town? And Harry's like, yes, stop talking to me about it. And she's like, really? You haven't even been with Murphy? Which is, there are three women in a row who kiss Harry and say, you're not with Murphy then? And he's like, yes, I'm not with Murphy. The time's not working out yet.
Yeah, because this is also the book that has Elaine back in.
Yes, I love Elaine.
What with one thing and another, it ends up where Elaine and Harry set up basically like a protection network for all these like small-time practitioners.
Yeah, there's the Paranet and all these people with tiny little powers are able to reach out and connect to each other. And now what happened in Chicago isn't going to happen anywhere else because now all the different cities are talking to each other now with their magical powers. Like, hey, is anybody killing wizards in your town? They're doing it here. So they've got forewarning against anything else like that happening again.
Yeah, and this kind of emphasizes that, Harry has these allies he can call on in the Wardens, which is nice. I think we had met Carlos a little bit beforehand, but
yes,
this is the episode that kind of really introduces him and what he can do and makes him like Harry's best wizard friend, which is nice.
Yeah.
But again, like I said, we're both really sorry, but we have to burn through these first two books real quick. So let's move on to the second one we're going to talk about. Listener, the same thing that I say during the Gravity Falls Supersode applies here. If any of this sounds interesting, just go read the books.
It's a lot more of a time commitment than Gravity Falls is, but it is worth it.
That depends on your reading speed. I don't want to judge you. What I will say is, if you are not a big reader and this still sounds interesting to you, and if you have like an Audible subscription, use that.
Yeah.
They're all narrated by James Marsters, who played Spike on Buffy and did other things. But freaking James Marsters is now forever like the voice of Harry in my head. It's great.
I have not heard these, but I know they must be fantastic.
They're very good. So the second book we're covering is called Small Favor.
Yep, book 10, double digits.
Woohoo! This starts off with the kind of underlying plot of this is Mab wants Harry to protect Gentleman John Marcone, who in the last book became an official government of the supernatural world.
Yeah, he is the only vanilla mortal in the entire thing. It's wizards and dragons and all these ancient powerful people and one Chicago gangster who is mighty enough to feel like he is on the same level as everyone else.
And let me tell you a true story that goes on from here on down, like through all the rest of these books so far. Marcone holds his own.
He does.
Like, the dude gets it. In fact, in this one, we meet Miss Guard.
Oh, we've met her before. She's introduced in book 5, but this is okay, when we really get to know her.
In book 5, she was just kind of this, like, casual character that was there, and we didn't know anything. In this one, we learned some stuff, including she's probably a Valkyrie. Like, an actual, literal, actual Valkyrie.
Yep.
Like, and this plays back to some stuff that we're going to talk about later on in this book. But, you know, the Valkyries, the choosers of the slain who carries dead warriors to Valhalla.
Uh-huh.
Keep that in mind. So turns out the Denarians really, really, really have this beef going on. And they want Marcone for some reason.
Yep.
And Dresden's just like, hey, but no.
Yeah, no. Don't touch that guy. He's part of Chicago and I'm part of Chicago. And don't touch Chicago things. Really, don't touch anything anywhere.
Yeah, like, listen, Harry has this whole thing where he's like, someday there won't be massive supernatural threats. And I'll deal with Marcone on that day. Today's not that day.
No.
He's been saying that for like 20 years now. Today's not that day. So the Denarians want him, and this is that book. This is for sure that one book where you look at it and go, villains don't get to Batman plan like this. But Nicodemus has a Batman plan, right, Melissa? Like, he knows literally every move everyone's gonna make.
Mm-hmm. But Harry and his friends pull out some real crazy tricks.
Yeah. we get to meet the archive again. Ivy makes a return.
Yes, Ivy and Kincaid are back in this.
And we get to see the two of them just wreck shop for a while in the aquarium.
Yeah. This is another book that really puts Chicago to good use. Like in Deadbeat when he resurrects and rides Sue the T-Rex skeleton. Uh-huh. In this book, they plan a meeting at the Shed Aquarium. And yeah, they burst just about every tank in Shed Aquarium.
It's very sad. So the whole deal is that the Denarians really, really want to corrupt Ivy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the goal. And everything that Nicodemus does in the early part of the book is just to get Dresden to call Ivy to town.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, they wind up on this, small island.
Yes, there's a tiny island off the coast in Lake Michigan where, like, all the North American ley lines converge.
It's totally not important at all, Melissa. It's just some island, right? There's nothing going on here.
It's just some island that Harry, like, impresses the natural spirit of, and he like soul bonds with this island, and now that island is his sanctum. Just casually, like, he's got a new sanctum. It's an entire magical island, and when he's on there, he can know every single thing that happens on the island.
We're not there yet. That happens in a couple books. Or in the next book, I think. In this one, he just makes contact with this creepy island that, as far as this book tells us, just has like a slightly malevolent spirit that doesn't want people on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of bad things go down on this island. Harry starts to think that maybe this island, like, is a magnet for bad luck.
Mm-hmm.
Because a pretty awful thing happens here. You know, the Denarians are in play.
Uh-huh.
And by the rules of the world, that means a Knight of the Cross or three need to show up.
Yeah. So we've got Michael, we've got Sonya, and there's a third sword. Sonya is the best.
Sonya's the best. I love that Russian. He's so good. But they go to the island to have this big showdown.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael gets pretty beat up.
Yep. Miss Guard flies in on a helicopter that is blaring Ride of the Valkyries on the stereo system. Of course it is. She has to stay on brand. Yep. And Michael is climbing up a ladder to get carried away on the helicopter, and he gets shot dangling in the air, and the last thing Harry sees is his friend's limp body just getting swung back and forth through the air.
And it's like a heavy automatic weapons fire.
Uh-huh.
That like does a lot of damage to the good boy, Michael. But they're not lost. So Murphy, Murphy draws the third sword that Harry had brought with him.
Which has been meant for her all along. Sonya knows it. We all know it.
And she just kicks some ass.
Yep.
It's pretty great. and again, we're kind of rushing through, and I feel bad because this is definitely one of those, like, really dramatic books, because it also has this thing where Queen Mab,
uh-huh,
stole Dresden's blasting rod.
Oh, yes.
All of his memories as to how to cast fire magic.
Uh-huh.
On the principle that Summer, who had basically put a bounty on Dresden, could track it. Dresden gets out of that by basically making a deal with one of the Billy Goats Gruff.
The Billy Goats Gruff are great. I was like, we're not moving along until we at least bring up the fact that the Billy Goats Gruff are real, and they keep showing up to fight Harry. The biggest one surprises him at McAnally's at the pub, and Murphy is there with him, and Murphy's like, hold on. I'm not letting you wreck up my town. I know you have a job to do. I am an officer of the law. See, look at my badge. I have a job to do. And yes, you would not be in violation of any laws taking down Harry, according to your magic system, but you would be in violation of Chicago laws. And she just polices the Billy Goat Gruff down. And there are little children in Fairyland that are getting told bedtime stories about Karen Murphy now.
Oh, absolutely there are. And so finally, the eldest Gruff, mm-hmm, the third and final of the three Billy Goats Gruff, approaches Harry, and Harry's kind of figured out what's going on at this point. And so here's one of the really terrifying things about the Billy Goats Gruff. He wears, as a trophy,
mm-hmm,
one of the badges of office of a wizard of the White Council. And not, like, just a regular member, but, like, one of the ruling councils.
Doesn't he have a couple of them? Doesn't he have like three of those?
Yeah. Which means this little goat has just murdered three serious wizards.
Mm-hmm.
And so Harry has this token of respect from the summer court that he got in a previous adventure and makes a deal with the Gruff for the Gruff to bring him a cake donut with white icing and sprinkles.
Yeah. Because the Gruff does not want to fight Harry, and it is the Gruff's responsibility only to fight Harry during these very specific circumstances. Otherwise, they have no beef. And so Harry's like, hold on. If I send you away from here, the circumstances in which you are to fight me disappear. They are null and void. Can you go run an errand for me that will take all the time in which you would otherwise be fighting me? And the Gruff's like, I see what you're doing here, and yes.
Yeah, like he's owed a favor from Summer, from the Summer Court, and that's how he cashes it in. It's really good, and that's going to come back as a joke later on. But at the end of it, at the end of this book, Harry meets the Archangel Uriel again, who gives him Soulfire.
Oh, yes.
Which is one of the better touches in this book. Like, it counteracts the Hellfire that he used to have. Mab restores his memories. Dresden visits everybody who was injured. And now Dresden is the custodian of two Swords of the Cross.
Yeah, because Murphy's already got a job. She doesn't want to also be a Knight of the Cross.
And Michael is, as far as we know right now, crippled.
Yep.
And the book ends with Dresden and his warden boss, Anastasia Lucio.
Yes.
Having a date.
Not before she asks him, hey, you're not with Murphy and Harry. That's my favorite running bit. Everybody who assumes they are together or is encouraging them to be together. Like, every other person in the cast is on board with it. And that's my favorite romantic comedy trope ever.
Pretty much everyone ships them, including the two of them.
Yes!
And they just won't get going.
They just don't do it!
So that's what, this one actually ends, I think, on the best note it could end on for what happened.
Yeah, it's pretty happy.
I mean, a lot of things changed. But it paves the way for what might be one of my favorite books of the whole series.
Yes.
What's this one called?
This is book 11. This is called Turncoat. And Harry's old nemesis, the warden Donald Morgan, who was sort of his magical probation officer when he was given that Doom of Damocles as a teenager for killing Justin Dumorne, the guy who has just been... He's had his eyes on Harry for decades. Like, I am waiting for you to mess up and I'll be there when you break the laws of magic again. That guy, miserably injured, comes pounding at Harry's door saying, I'm on the run for the White Council. You have to hide me because nobody would expect to find me here with you.
And also, critically, this is the first moment that we get the slightly running thread that won't get picked up until the next book, where Harry is now struck by really, really bad migraines.
Yeah.
So this whole thing is a tried and true noir detective story.
Yep, you have been framed for this murder. He is on the run because somebody has killed what's that councilman's name?
Fortier? LaFortier.
Yeah. Someone has killed Wizard LaFortier, who his particular focus as a wizard of the White Council was he had a lot of outreach to smaller wizarding communities from all across the world. So he had a lot of pull. There's a lot of people on his side, and there's a lot of people adding into this manhunt for Morgan. Like, they are not going to let a murder like this go unpunished. So Morgan is dead meat unless Harry can figure out who really did it and why Morgan was framed.
Yeah, and the whole thing, like, we finally get to see a really good look at the inside workings of the White Council.
Mm-hmm.
We get to see kind of the politics involved. We get to see the Merlin in a yeah. little bit more favorable light than we had seen previously.
Yeah.
We meet Binder, who is just great.
Yeah.
He's a little slug, but he's great.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of big things that happen here. We get to see Molly kind of growing up a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Mm-hmm.
We meet a Negloshi, a skinwalker.
Yes. Yep. This is one of the most horrifying things Harry has ever had to look on with his wizard sight. It is ancient, it is incredibly powerful, and, well, we're glad we've got Listens to Wind, because he takes that thing down.
Yeah, so this is kind of an adaption of part of Navajo beliefs and mythology. The Skinwalker, as it's presented here, were basically angels, like messengers of the Sky People, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I'm a white boy, and I'm probably getting a lot of this wrong. It's a fascinating mythology. You should look into it, reader, listener. Go read it. It's great. The Skinwalkers were basically, they're basically, as far as this book presents it, and I will not in any way claim that Turncoat is definitive, because it's not. It's adaptations of mythologies. But the way they present it is they're basically fallen angels. Like, that's the equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
And they got corrupted by power. And Harry feels something chasing him. He turns on his wizard sight, and he sees it for a split second, and it is enough to almost break him as a human being.
Yeah, he, I think, crashes his car, and he's like, I need a place to run and hide so that I can just get my mind back. And just so he doesn't keep thinking about this horrible thing, he's running down the street reciting prime numbers to himself until he gets to Billy and George's house, and he's like, can I lock myself in your bedroom for an hour and try to meditate this away?
It's, yeah, he has to just keep exposing himself to it.
Yeah.
As kind of like immersion therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems awful, really. But the Negloshi is not necessarily the biggest threat. Like, it's a threat, for sure. But the Negloshi got wind of Morgan and is chasing him down. Like, that's all it is. The Negloshi's just kind of there. He just mm-hmm. happened upon the scene. The Negloshi does end up kidnapping Thomas.
Yes.
And we'll get to that in a little bit. So there's basically this kind of this little conspiracy with a minor member of the White Court of Vampires again.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to sell Morgan back to the White Council so the White Council can kill him and take a very powerful piece off the board.
Yes.
So Harry, being the kind of stubborn idiot that he is, goes and bonds with that island we talked about. This is where he does the Sanctum Invocation.
Yes, that's right.
Names the island Demon Reach because he is a drama queen. And sets up this whole scenario where all of these opposing forces collide on this island.
Uh-huh.
He uses, like, the little people, like Toot Toot, to basically rain, like, firework Roman candles down on people.
Mm-hmm.
He uses the wizards that come to capture Morgan as basically hit squads.
Yep.
And even, like, Lara Wraith brings a couple of her siblings because they have to rescue Thomas. That's why Lara's involved.
Mm-hmm.
And they go all just crazy. Like, Lara takes a concussion grenade full on and survives it and then eats the conspirator Wraith.
Yep. Yep.
Almost drives Harry insane doing it.
Yeah.
And then Harry has to go and, like, square up with the Negloshi one-on-one.
He holds his own okay, but this is listens to wins fights to have. That's a yeah. lot of S's. And we get to learn some of the real depth of his power. We know he's a great healer. We've seen him heal. Did not know he could transform into a variety of animals.
Yeah, he's, they talk a lot about kind of some of those Navajo labels, like, someone of the blessing way and all mm-hmm. this. And, like, again, if y'all haven't looked at Navajo mythology, go give that a glance. It's yeah. incredible. It is, I think, one of the most unique mythologies on the planet. It's really good. So eventually what we find out is the Negloshi had tortured Thomas to the point where Thomas had been driven mad by his demon.
Yeah, Thomas tried real hard to be a good boy for a long time, and this broke him, and he drained like 12 people dry in a night.
Yeah, it's pretty bleak because mm-hmm. It's supposed to kind of show that, like, people are stripping away Harry's resources a little bit. And, man, it does a number on them. But eventually what we see, and again, I know we're rushing through this, but we have a really big book that we have to talk about.
Yeah.
So eventually what we find out is Dresden had set up the entire encounter on the island for one purpose alone. And that was to have another PI that he hired.
Yes, this is all a distraction. This is all a way to get the rest of the White Council funneling in through Chicago. And he needs to see one person go through one particular magic portal way through to Chicago. And he has just hired this other PI, this incredibly normal man, to just sit there and take a photo that Harry can dramatically pull out as evidence.
It is so good. And, like, he sends Mouse with this PI to just, like, basically identify the person later.
Mm-hmm.
And Mouse, as it turns out, is perfectly acceptable as a material and character witness.
Yes.
Because he's a temple foo dog.
Yes.
Who is a literal... It's not made clear in any of these books so far. It's not made clear if Mouse is a demon or a spirit that is confined to the shape of a dog, but it's definitely one of those. And a few of the White Council members are very surprised that one allows himself to be Harry's pet.
There's an amazing bit about this in the next book that is, it's such a tiny moment, but it is one of my favorite moments in all of Changes.
Oh yeah. No, it's very good. So they get this picture and they have Mouse and they go to this big courtroom scene and Harry does like a Matlock.
Yes, he does a Matlock.
And like whips out the picture at the appropriate moment. He kind of like front loads some information to McCoy and they figure out that the clerk of the senior counsel had been using ink that could slowly change and like corrupt the minds of wizards. And when they like expose him, he basically releases a massive outsider into the council and then runs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great. Morgan ends up like Morgan, who at this point is, I think, 2 seconds away from death himself.
He's been 2 seconds away from death for, like, 3 days.
Yeah, he...
He's very stubborn.
He's very stubborn, and, like, he runs through all of these corridors right behind Harry and manages to kill the real murderer, but not before we find out that the Black Council had deeply infiltrated the White Council.
Yeah.
had corrupted the minds of God only knows how many wizards,
mm-hmm.
including Anastasia Lucio.
And it is revealed that she has been psychically influenced to date Harry. And she liked him to begin with. This may have been something she would have considered to begin with without any influence. But no, there were outside malevolent forces just kind of gently, subconsciously nudging her along to say, get involved with that guy, and then anything you have to say about him will become suspicious. And will they're trying to ruin both of their characters by having the two of them hook up.
But also to keep tabs on Harry, because yes, they weren't yes. able to influence him.
Yeah, they can't get to Harry, so she kind of acts as a subconscious informant, and it's very sad.
Well, and what it does is it does a couple things. One, it splinters Harry from a lot of the, from like his biggest ally outside of McCoy on the council.
Uh-huh.
And two, because they had been sleeping together, yep. but not been in love,
mm-hmm.
the protection he had from the vampires is gone.
Yeah.
So, a lot of stuff happened here. And at the very end, Dresden and McCoy form a secondary group called the Grey Council.
There's plots within plots. There's webs within webs.
It's deep. And the whole thing is designed to weaken the White Council in advance of what's about to happen next.
Before we continue to changes, can I provide a small romance update?
Yes,
you know, if
please.
I had like a beacon, like a beep noise, some sort of a siren, this would be the romance alert noise. Before Harry goes into this giant battle on Demon Reach, the island, he has this little moment with Murphy, and she kisses him on the forehead, and she kisses him on the mouth. Not quickly, but not without passion, is what the book says. I have memorized this. And she says, you know I love you, Harry. And you'd better kick whatever ass you need to get back here safe, because my world would be a lot scarier without you in it.
Aww.
Yeah, and he does the same thing back to her. Like, he kisses her on the forehead, he kisses her gently on the mouth, and he says, love you too. And then she just says, you jerk. And, like, storms off and leaves, trying to hide the fact that she's crying. And it's fantastic. Very it's very, very good.
Things are building up to a change.
Yes.
So something we had mentioned, I think, early on in this supersode, to part the kimono a little bit,
mm-hmm.
it's been a couple months that we've been working on recording these well in advance of when you're hearing them.
Yeah.
So I don't remember what we have and haven't talked about, but I think we had mentioned at one point that all of the titles, 1 through 11, and then from 13 on so far, are two words, and each word has the same number of letters.
Mm-hmm.
This book is called Changes.
Yep, and I have known since the day I picked up this book series back in, like, February or March, I'm looking at the names of all the book titles, and I'm like, oh, there's one called Changes. I will start preparing myself now. So for months, the majority of this year, I've just had this big gray storm cloud hanging over my head. Like, I will have to reckon with whatever Changes is. And the change I thought was going to be there is not hidden up Jim Butcher's sleeve. He throws it out immediately. It is sentence one. It is the blurb on the back of the book. Back in Death Masks, when Harry had his final night with Susan Rodriguez, he got her pregnant, and she calls him out of the blue and just says, Harry, the Red Court has taken our daughter. I'm flying up to meet you. Talk to you later. Bye.
Yeah. So that last time Susan was in town and they slept together, turns out she got a little bit pregnant.
Slightly.
Just a little, just small case of the baby. And Harry Dresden has a daughter named Margaret, named after Harry's mother.
Yeah, little Maggie.
Oh, I love Maggie so much.
Yeah. And she's about 7 or 8 at this point.
And she's been captured by the Red Court of Vampires.
Yes, because way back when McCoy dropped a satellite on Duke Ortega's house, Duke Ortega's wife survived, and she's real mad about it. And so to get back at Harry, who has defied her husband, to get back at the larger Council of Wizards who had killed him, to get back at Susan, who has been trying to ruin all of the Red Court's business throughout South and Central America, she kidnaps Maggie, and Harry has to call in every favor possible to try and get her back.
So there's a list on Wikipedia that's just called Summary of Changes in Harry's Life.
Oh my god, they changed everything. Can I go through them? Let's see if there's any that I miss. Okay. His office burns down. He hadn't been to his office in a long time.
let's be clear about this. His office doesn't just burn down. His office, years ago, had been purchased by the Red Court.
Yes.
And they put C4 in all of the walls around his unit specifically.
Yes.
And then they blew it up.
Yeah, so now Harry is wanted for a potential case of terrorism.
Yeah, a little bit of terrorism there. Okay. So that's one.
Office is gone. The Noble Knight, the Blue Beetle, decimated, cannot be repaired at this point. Also had Harry's staff in the back of it, so no
almost
car.
All of Harry's tools, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think his blasting rod survives slightly longer, but I think it is also gone by the end of this book.
Yep.
His coat gets destroyed. The coat was a gift from Susan to begin with.
Yep, that gets just completely shredded by the end of this.
His apartment building burns to the ground, and he is dreadfully injured at the beginning of this arson case. But he's like, oh no, I can't just run out of here. I have elderly neighbors who live upstairs. And he is trying to climb a ladder to get up to the second floor and save his neighbors, and he... like, his legs were broken, and so he can barely get up the ladder, and he falls off the ladder, and he breaks his back, and it is only Sonya who is able to save the day.
Yeah, so Harry does get partially paralyzed.
Yeah, and so he is rendered completely physically unable to walk, to stand, to do anything to help his daughter, and he calls in the last chip he had available. Now, Harry never gave in to the Denarian coin, but there's something kind of similar. He can give in to Queen Mab's offer for him to become the new Winter Knight.
Yeah, and it sure is a ceremony, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, they kind of magically, spiritually bone each other, this, like, melding of souls. He has to kill Lloyd Slate, finally.
And we're going to find out later. I'm going to go ahead and spoil this a little bit. That entire ritual that took place on that stone table that we had seen back in Summer Night.
Uh-huh.
That whole ritual was basically broadcast like a pay-per-view to every single Fae.
Oh, that's right. Yes, because Toot is trying to talk to him about it. Like, oh, hey, you got with Queen Mab, and Sonya's there. And Sonya's like, what did you do?
Yeah, that happens later. But yeah, basically all of Faye got to watch that go down. Harry describes it as trying to have sex with a hurricane.
Yep.
So just go ahead and have that mental image. okay, so you've got a couple of, there's still a few more big changes.
Oh, boy. He meets Odin. This is smaller than you would think it is. Harry briefly meets Odin. Odin gives him a donut also. This one doesn't have sprinkles on it like the Billy Goat's Gruff donut did. This is a plain vanilla donut that Odin gives him.
I think, didn't he meet in a small favor?
No, I don't remember him being there. I think he was mentioned. I think
okay.
the, what is his name, like, Vaderung, whatever, the kind of mortal face of Odin as the head of Monarch Securities, where Misgard was hired out from. He's been mentioned before, but this is the first time you go and meet him, and Harry's like, oh, you are Odin, then. You are Mr. Wednesday? You are the Keeper of Thunder and Lightning? Hi, can you help me get my daughter back, please, sir?
Yeah, and appropriately enough, he runs, like, a securities and intelligence corporation now. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty, we're gonna have some fun times with Donner Vaderung down the line that we don't want to spoil yet, but
oh good,
heck yeah, he comes back and it's delightful. Mm-hmm. So that's a good one. There's some more things.
Okay, are we ready to get down to Mexico?
Well, not quite yet. So there's a few more things we have to talk about, and things that have been, like, stripped away from Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of plague has hit Edinburgh, and the White Council is effectively out of commission.
Yeah. He gets a letter, like, a minor warden who we've briefly met once sends Harry a letter like, hey, just letting you know, I'm okay, Lucio's okay. But really, we just mean we are not in immediate mortal peril. Yeah, we are kind of locked up here. We cannot go help you, Harry. Good luck!
So what had happened was, early on, Harry found out that the Red Court, Ariana Ortega, Duke Ortega's wife, who was older than him and changed him into a vampire, mm-hmm, when he was a conquistador who was raiding her lands.
Yeah.
So she is at the White Council headquarters trying to negotiate a peace with this piece of shit named Christos.
Yeah, who is the replacement for Lafortier on the council.
Yeah. And so Harry basically just, like, throws down a challenge right to her face.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the way Christos reacts sets a bunch of the younger wizards off. A bunch of the older wizards get hit with some magic disease. The younger wizards basically get arrested because they tried to start a revolt.
Uh-huh.
And so the White Council is out of play for Harry. Yep. And the Grey Council is setting up somewhere for a strike at the Reds.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to play. Because Harry doesn't want to tell anyone that his daughter exists.
Yeah, he's just telling most of the people except for his immediate family, like, Murphy knows, Thomas knows. He walks up to Thomas like, congratulations, you're an uncle. And Thomas is like, none of my sisters have had a kid. Wait, what are you saying, Harry?
Yeah, it's Thomas is in this. He's very good, but he's like embracing the monster a little bit.
Thomas has turned into a full bloodthirsty predator. He's kind of keeping it in check here because there are very important things to do. But yeah, everyone is careful not to, like, leave him alone with Molly or anything like that.
This is also the book where, like, everyone in Harry's life just looks at him and goes, hey, you know Molly's still in love with you, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, literally everyone does that.
Yes.
Which doesn't have a lot to do in this book. It has a lot to do in the next book.
Yep. I'm like 250 pages into Ghost Story already. But there's
so much. There.
Yeah. There's been a little bit of it, and I'm sure there is more to come. Ghost Story is very concerning.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. It's great. So that happens. Here's a big one. Here's a big one that doesn't get revealed until very near the end. So, turns out, Ebenezer McCoy is Harry's grandpa.
Yes, he's not just figuratively grandfatherly. No, when he told Harry, oh yeah, I used to train your mom, what he has left out is, oh yeah, I used to, you know, literally biologically father and raise your mom as my daughter. Hello, grandson.
Which makes Maggie his great-granddaughter and sets the stage for something we're going to talk about later. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Speaking of Margaret Le Fay.
Yes. Harry goes to Leah. He goes back to his fairy godmother. Well, the FBI is about to come knocking down Harry's door to talk to him about that act of terrorism we discussed earlier.
Yeah, and he's a little bit terrorism.
Oh no, I've got a lot of stuff that I have to hide from them, like Bob. They can't find Bob. So he's going to do something he's never done before. He's going to open up a way to the Never Never in his house. He's never dared to do it before because the doorway goes both ways. He didn't want anything attacking him through this, by kind of opening up that magical portal. But he's like, okay, I have to pull this card now. So he goes into the Never Never. He hides his stuff there and he runs into Leah. And he thinks about how he wishes he could prepare his daughter, and how he wishes his mother had prepared him better. And he's like, well, maybe she's not done yet. And he asks his godmother, did my mother leave me anything for you to give me? A question he's never really asked before. And that's how the Fae work. You have to ask them very specific questions to get what you want. And so she provides him with this magical stone that fits right into his pentagram amulet. And this is basically magical MapQuest, and he knows all the ways to get anywhere.
Yeah, it's an info dump that, yep, that his mom, because his mom is described as like the one wizard most proficient with using the ways. Like, mm-hmm. I think they describe it as like she could have breakfast in Beijing, lunch in Cape Town, and then tea in London all in the same day.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's a bunch of people, we find out later, a bunch of people end up kind of keeping an eye on her.
Yeah.
For McCoy. Oh, yeah, we need to talk about that because that happens. I just remembered something that we have to talk about. So he gets that knowledge, and he uses that knowledge to basically cheat and do this like grand research and investigation across country lines.
Yep.
Yeah, through all these like really truly creepy places.
Uh-huh.
Including like a locked down mine tunnel that's just full of death gas.
Oh yeah, there's that.
And yeah, a whole bunch of stuff. But before we get to Mexico, the other thing we need to talk about, Harry... Wait, hold on. Is that even this episode? Is that this book? That's not this book. I'm thinking of a different book. Never mind.
See, I don't even know what this is yet.
I almost just said things. I'm not gonna. So he takes on the Winter Mantle from Mab and gets promised enough time to get his daughter back.
Yes.
So, and yeah, go ahead.
He's also given Leah as, she is his fairy godmother, literally, but we see her acting more archetypically in that role in this book because she waves her magic wand pretty much and dresses him and Susan for battle like she is dressing Cinderella for the ball.
Yeah, like Harry ends up dressed as like an up-armored fantasy conquistador.
Yes.
Just because Leah knows it'll piss off Ariana.
Yeah, yeah. And of course it feels like he's just wearing his normal t-shirt and jeans, but no, he looks like he is just striding in like big shining armor, and he's just like, why can't I just wear my coat? Can you make it look like I'm wearing my coat?
And she's just like, no, 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 no. You have to be fashionable for once, Harry.
Oh, one more thing. This is a tiny bit that I absolutely love. I think she tries to put the helmet on him, too. And he says, nuh-uh, I don't do hats. And every cover for every one of these Dresden Files books has the, like, male model being Dresden wearing this big black hat. All of the book covers never once shows up in the actual stories. And I love that, like, weird little meta joke.
Yeah, and to the point where he actually, like, makes fun of it. Like, he's like, I'll never wear a hat. In one of the earlier books, he was just like, next time, six shooters, 10-gallon hat. Like, just, like, play up being the sheriff. Yeah, it's great. So they basically find out that the Red Court of Vampires... was, it's kind of, it's kind of suggested that it might have been like Aztec or Incan Empire was all vampires, like the high end of it. And so the king of the Red Court is a vampire so old that he is practically a demigod.
Yes.
And they've basically taken over Chichen Itza, which is a real place, and are using it and the massive ley lines under it to conduct a ritual. Now, Harry doesn't quite know what this ritual is going to do yet, but it basically, you sacrifice the youngest member of a bloodline, and it kills everyone attached to that bloodline.
So what Harry thinks is going to happen is they're going to sacrifice Maggie. That will kill me. That will also kill Thomas. Susan. You know, he knows he's an orphan. Susan is also conveniently an orphan. So he's like, okay, it'll just be the three of us. This shouldn't extend through Thomas to the rest of the Wraith clan, but maybe I can make them think it's going to do that and get them on my side. And he thinks this is much smaller than what it is. This is before he learns Ebenezer McCoy is his literal grandfather.
And if y'all remember, Ebenezer McCoy is the Blackstaff.
Yes. Who has killed so many people.
Like, they already... This group is very, very strongly implied to be working with the Black Council.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least Ariana is implied to be working with the Black Council. And kind of the implication here is they got rid of Morgan in the last book. And it's been said more than once, like when they were covering the war between the White Council and the Red Court, that Morgan had gotten within striking distance of the Red King and made him run away. So they killed Morgan off already. If they kill off Ebenezer, the White Council will fall.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. If you don't have Harry Dresden, who, when he decides to fight properly with the White Council, is a real formidable foe, and Ebenezer McCoy, like, who do you have left? You're fighting Swiss cheese at that point.
Yeah, it's very bad. So that's the plot as far as Harry knows. He rallies this whole crew of people. He gets Sonya, he gets Murphy, he gets Thomas, he gets Molly.
They describe themselves as like the Fellowship of the Ring. I think at one point, like, there ends up being nine of them. And Sonya's like, oh, cool, this is like the Fellowship of the Ring. I call Legolas. And Thomas is like, no way, I'm Legolas. And then while Harry is doing something important, in the background, everybody is just talking this out and assigning different roles.
And Harry ends up being Sam.
Oh, because Sam is the most loyal, who did the farthest beyond what anybody expected of him.
Yeah, it's very appropriate.
One other tiny bit. I think I might have teased this in the last book when we were just talking about how great Sonya is. Sonya's so chill about this whole thing that, like, when Leah has commandeered this limousine to carry everybody around in, the entire party, he's like, this is actually a pretty good day for me. I've never been in a limousine before. Like, I don't care what happens the rest of the day after this. I'm in a limo, and this is fun.
It's pretty great. We do need to talk about two other quick things. So there's this character that's been kind of recurring in the Chicago Police Department called Rudolph.
Oh, yes.
Who is a little asshole.
Yes.
Deserves everything that's coming to him. He's been gunning for Murphy ever since we met him. Because Murphy decides to vanish for like a couple days in the middle of a terror investigation. She gets fired.
Yep. She's finally lost it. Yep. She was barely able to cling on to a demotion earlier in the series. And now they've had their final straw with her. And I guess this is the end of that beautiful police legacy.
It's pretty sad. And Rudolph kind of orchestrates that. Mm-hmm. So hopefully down the line, he's going to get his.
Yep.
The other person we need to talk about is Susan's kind of operational partner.
Oh, yes! Martin.
Martin, like Susan, is like a half-turned vampire working mm-hmm. with the Order of St. Giles. And the two of them have been operating ever since they last met Harry. And they have been destabilizing the fuck out of Red Court interests everywhere. Yeah. We find out in this book that Martin has been doing this for like 200 years.
Mm-hmm. He old.
He very old. So that all sets the stage for the trip to Mexico, where we get what is arguably the best moment with Mouse ever.
Okay, if you've read these, and if you remember way back when she is first introduced in book 3, Leah is like, "Oh, Harry, I'd love to keep you as a pet and turn you into one of my hounds. You'd be so much happier and safer as a hound." To get them through the jungles of Mexico fast enough, Leah turns everyone into a dog for a couple minutes so they can run faster.
And, yeah, it's, they kind of go a little nuts. It's fine.
Yeah, and while Harry is a dog, he can at last understand what Mouse is saying. And he hears Leah talking to Mouse, and she's like, "How did Dresden ever win somebody as powerful as you?" And Mouse says, "Dresden didn't win me. I won him."
Because Mouse just, like, squares up to Leah this whole time, and at one point just looks at her like she wanders off, and he has to be like the alpha of the pack of dogs, and he just like looks at her as she's leaving and just goes, "Bitch."
Yes.
In a way that is 100% just like Harry talking about someone. So it's like Mouse is the Harry Dresden of the dog world.
Oh, and he that's is. Just
beautiful.
He is. He's like, we're going to see him compared to other foo dogs, and he's going to be way taller than the rest of them.
That would be pretty great. It's Mouse is amazing in this because he finally gets to talk.
Finally, not, the dog talks.
And it's not like full of wisdom or anything. It's just he's like every good dog who takes after his owner. He's just Harry, but a dog.
It's so good.
Except maybe, like everyone else in Harry's life, more competent than Harry.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, so they make it, and they have this great plan where, like, Harry's going to go pick a fight, and everyone else is going to try to start, like, freeing some slaves that were going to be there for sacrifices.
Yeah.
The fight is against Ariana, and Harry wins?
Yeah.
Because she doesn't know how to fight a magic person.
Yeah. Like,
it's a really weirdly paced thing. Like, this whole fight is very oddly paced. It's kind of like my one criticism is that I feel like Jim Butcher kind of had to rush in this book
mm-hmm.
and had to, like, squeeze things in at the end. So he beats her in this duel. And then the king uses a loophole to not hold up his end of the bargain.
Yeah, it was like, if you can best the Countess of the Red Court in battle, we will allow you to take your daughter away from here. Something like that. But it doesn't matter because it does not happen.
Well, what happens is the king had been playing off of Dresden's kind of supposition that the king didn't or couldn't speak English.
Oh, yeah.
And had been using an interpreter. So at the end, after the fight happened, Dresden's just like, well, time to pay up. Give me the child. And the king's just, in perfect English, says, no.
Mm-hmm.
I never said a word to you about this deal. And Harry loses his mind a little bit.
Yes.
And Susan loses her mind a little bit.
Yep.
Because, see, here's something we hadn't mentioned yet. As per usual, because these are all enemies of the light, Murphy had the sword she used before. Sonya had his sword. And because Harry is the custodian of the swords, he gave Michael's sword, Amorakius, the Sword of Love, to Susan with the understanding that she's a mother.
Yeah, she is acting out of pure love when she is doing these things. They're terrible things, but she has love in her heart when she is doing them, and that will cooperate with the power of the sword.
And boy, does it. Like,
yep.
That thing burns down vampires left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, like, she had the clothes she had been given by Leah make her invisible.
Oh, yes.
So she basically, like, sneaks into this room at the top of this pyramid where they were about to sacrifice Molly, and she climbs onto altar. Maggie, right. Yeah. Sorry.
Molly's elsewhere. Fine. She's fine. Molly's, with big finger quotes around it.
Molly's being a human rave machine somewhere. It's very good. Maggie is on this altar. Susan, while invisible, climbs up onto the altar, like, stands over her daughter and pulls the sword out and drives off some of the most powerful immortals in the world just by the power of the sword.
And the king does not see this. He just thinks, oh, there's some weird protection over this girl.
It's very bad, because what happens is we learn that there was a traitor. Who was that?
This was Martin. It was Martin who told Ariana, hey, Maggie exists. You can take her. You can use her in this ritual. This is the effect it's going to have.
What we find out, it's confusing for a minute here. What we find out is, okay, I'm just going to lay it all out here. This is a huge spoiler. I'll say that at the front. I'll front load that on. Centuries ago, Martin had his family murdered by Red Courts. And to get back at them, he joined the Red Court as a priest and rose up to become a high priest of the Red Court. And then defected to the Order of St. Giles, but kept feeding information back to the Red Court to become the most trusted mortal amongst everyone.
Yes.
To engineer this exact situation. We don't find all of that out quite yet. What we find out is that he betrayed St. Giles and betrayed Susan and Harry. And so he shoots Susan. And Harry spells it out for her. Like, he spells it out to Susan. He's like, Susan, he set your kid up.
And Susan completely loses her last shreds of human composure. She gives in to the vampire side of her. She slaughters Martin. And that was the final twist of the key in the lock to turn her into a full vampire.
And this is when Harry has a realization that in the books, he prefaces it before he explains it to us as, may God forgive me.
It's the roughest thing he has ever had to do. He realizes that bloodlines, the way this ritual kills up a bloodline, is kind of figurative. It's not strictly, you know, parent-child familial relationships. This can work with vampire sires.
Yeah, it's not when the ritual specifies a bloodline, the ritual does not care what bloodline it is.
No.
So. The ritual is just a gun. And right now, with Molly on the or Maggie on the table, it's aimed at Harry. If Maggie's pulled off the table and Susan's put on the table and she's murdered on the table, it targets the Red Court.
She is the youngest vampire of the Red Court now that she has been fully turned. Harry, if he kills her, he kills the entire Red Court of vampires.
And I don't know if this is to his credit or not, but he doesn't hesitate.
No, he does it as quickly as he can.
Like, he tries to tell Susan what he's doing a little bit, but then he just does it. And the entire Red Court, all through Chichen Itza, all through the world, all of the half-vampires in the Order of St. Giles, every single Red Court member dies.
And so where this leaves us now, Harry is a broken man. His daughter is safe. She has pretty much just passed out from all of the exhaustion and stress. He never really speaks to her. She never speaks to him. We don't learn if she actually knows English, which is something he brings up, like, oh, she was raised in Mexico. I don't know if we actually even speak the same language. He's holding her as she's sleeping in his arms. He gets to have that little bit of time with her, but he knows I sold my soul to the white, to the Winter Court. I belong to Winter now. I only had this long to kind of put my affairs in order. I cannot be a part of her life anymore. And so they kind of pass her off to Father Fort Hill after they get back to Chicago. They pass her off to Father Fort Hill. It is his job to put her somewhere safe, and Harry can never know where that is.
Yeah, and so they get back. Harry kind of has enough time to verify that everyone that he took there is alive and okay.
Yeah.
More or less. And because he doesn't have a home, he goes, Thomas gives him the keys to the Water Beetle,
which is Thomas's battered old houseboat
that we've met a couple times. It's saved the day more than once.
Yeah. And Harry is there just sort of trying to piece as much of his life back together as he can before, just figure out what to do with this little pocket of time he has before Mab comes for him and Murphy comes to see him. And she tells him that she's been fired, and he says, oh no, what are you going to do? And she's like, I just want to get drunk and grab the next reasonably healthy male I see and just have sex with him and try and forget this entire thing. And he says, do you want some company for that?
The way he phrases it is like, in his mind, he's just like, he opens his mouth and words come out and he's just like, uh-oh. Like,
this might be bad timing, but damn it, bad timing is for people who have time. And she just sort of nods and agrees, just very stiffly, like, yes, you are a healthy male. That seems like it would be a convenient choice. Harry, I'm going to go home and shower, and I will pick you up in an hour. And
she leaves.
And Harry tries to make himself look nice. He showers, too. He's getting ready for, amidst all this death and destruction, an exciting date night. And he's standing out on the deck of the boat, and he gets shot. And the book ends with him sinking down into the cold depths of Lake Michigan, and he remembers that death curse from way back in book 8 saying, no, book 7, saying, die alone.
Yep. Cassius the Snake Boy whispers in his ears. And the book ends with Harry sinking into cold and darkness.
And while I was in the middle of reading Changes, I was telling somebody about it, and I'm like, it's almost suspicious how few people have died throughout this entire series. Up until when Harry murders Susan, the most serious character death we had been Morgan, who had been an adversary we never really liked, who did not show up that much. And I was telling them, oh, I'm kind of concerned reading this big, pivotal, climactic book that, like, one of the regular players, one of the real people in Harry's community is going to die. And I started to think, I know the next book after this is called Ghost Story. Is it Harry that's going to die? Is this going to be the final change? what's the biggest change we can give to this man? He is no longer alive. And I was so mad at myself that I was right.
It's a gut punch for sure, is yeah. what that is.
I'm so glad I have all of these to read right in a row and there's nothing to stop me, because if I had to read these as they were coming out in real time, I'd just be like a miserable knot on the floor for like a year and a half or however long it took for book 13 to get published.
Oh yeah, it was a nightmare. It was an actual waking nightmare.
What book was the series on when you started reading them?
I think White Knight was the first one that I bought new.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. It was a wait. It was intense.
Yeah, I've been fortunate. Although having 15 novels to read in a row, I don't know. It'll be a real adjustment to my life to have to suddenly just stop and just have to wait until Peace Talks is ready.
And that is taking a minute. Like, he is taking his time with it, because apparently it's going to be a while. And it's going to be a big one, too, apparently. So, you know, we got that to look forward to.
Yeah, dude, buckle up.
So the fun never ends over here. So next week, we're going to be back with the last three books currently. 13, 14, and 15. But until then, Melissa, where can people find you online?
I am on Twitter at WilkyWit. That's WILKYWIT. You can hear me on your actual play RPG hub, The Lost Library. I am a cast member in Grayscale, and I'm also a cast member in Fifth Watch. And then I have a pop culture review podcast called The Review Show, and that's on a network called The Whatnauts, spelled WHATNAUTS, like astronauts.
You can find us on the internet at fifthdraw.com, follow us on Twitter at fifthdraw, or email us at social@fifthdraw.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Hoodley. If you enjoyed this episode, why not give us a rating and a review, or maybe tell a friend? Getting the word out helps us immensely. Our music is Arcade Montage by Lee Rosevere and can be found at the Free Music Archive. That's all for this week. We hope you'll join us next week for another episode. And hey, thanks for listening.